వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి అతస్త్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Om Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 5th of March 2020, and with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you again to this morning's segment Divine Glory on Thursday Live from Prashanthinilayam. Let me as always first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. As true spiritual aspirants, how should we refine ourselves in the journey of life? Bhagwan lovingly reminds us today, and I quote, "Rice in its natural state and boiled rice, can these two be the same? The hardness of natural rice is absent in the boiled one. The boiled grain is soft, harmless and sweet. The unboiled grain is hard, conceited and full of delusion. Similarly, both the types of human beings are souls or jivis, but those immersed in external illusions or avidya maya are people, while those immersed in internal illusions or vidya maya are spiritual aspirants. God is immersed in neither external nor internal illusions. He is devoid of both. He who has no external illusions becomes a spiritual aspirant, and when he is devoid of even internal illusions, he can be termed as God. Such a person's heart becomes the seat of God. Though the Lord is situated in every heart, spiritual practice is necessary so that they may discover it for themselves, right? It isn't possible for us to see our own face. We need a mirror to show us its image. So too, a basic path or marga, a spiritual practice, is necessary to become devoid of qualities or gunas." Unquote. This was taken from Prema Vahini, chapter 59. Dear listener, the time right now in our studios is 49 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I've lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by the second part of a conversation with Dr. Alan Levy, a practicing psychoanalyst from the United States of America. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hema Tanth. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Later at 11:30, Bishu will join you with a segment Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And here it is for your listening pleasure.
Chapter 6, Ram Navami Festival and Masjid Repairs. Efficacy of the touch of the Guru's hand. Ram Navami Festival, its origin, transformation, repairs of the Masjid. Before describing Ram Navami Festival and Masjid repairs, the author makes some preliminary remarks about Sadguru as follows. Efficacy of the touch of the Guru's hand. When Sadguru is the boatsman, he is sure to carry us safely and easily beyond the worldly ocean. The word Sadguru brings to mind Sai Baba, the perfect master. He appears to me as if standing before me and applying Udi to my forehead and placing his hand of blessing on my head. Then joy fills my heart and love overflows through my eyes. Wonderful is the power of the touch of Guru's hand. The subtle body, consisting of thoughts and desires, which cannot be burnt by the gross fire, is destroyed by the mere touch of the Guru's hand. And the sins of many past births are cleaned and washed away. Even the speech of those who feel agitated when they hear religious and godly talks attain calmness. The sight of Sai Baba's handsome form chokes our throat with joy, makes the eyes overflow with tears, and overwhelms the heart with emotions. It awakens in us, I am He, Brahma consciousness, manifests the joy of self-realization, and dissolving the distinction of I and Thou, makes us one with the Supreme. When I begin to read scriptures, at every step I am reminded of my Sadguru, Sai Baba, who assumes the form of Rama or Krishna and makes me listen to his life. For instance, when I sit to listen to Bhagavat, Sai becomes Krishna from top to toe, and I think he sings the Bhagavat or Uddhav Gita for the welfare of the devotees. When I myself start to write something, I cannot compose a few words or sentences, but when he, of his own accord, makes me write, I go on writing, and there is no end to it. When the disciple's egoism props up, he presses it down with his hand and gives him his own power, makes him gain his object, and thus satisfies and blesses him. If anyone prostrates before Sai and surrenders heart and soul to him, then all the chief objects of life, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, are easily attained unsolicitedly. Four parts of karma, dhyana, yoga, and bhakti lead us separately to God. Of this, the path of bhakti is thorny and full of pits and ditches, and thus difficult to travel. But if you, relying on your Sadguru, avoid the pits and thorns and walk straight, it will take you to the destination, says Sai Baba. After philosophizing about the self-existent Brahma, his power to create the world and the world created, and stating that all these three are ultimately one and the same, the author quotes Sai Baba's words, guaranteeing the welfare of the bhaktas. In Baba's words, there will never be any doubt or scarcity regarding food and clothes in my devotee's home. It is my special characteristic that I shall always look to and provide for the welfare of those devotees who worship me wholeheartedly with their minds ever fixed on me. Lord Krishna has also said the same in the Gita. Therefore, strive not much for food and clothes. If you want anything, beg of the Lord. Renounce worldly honors. Try to get Lord's grace and blessings and be honored in his court. Do not be deluded by worldly honor. The form of the deity should be firmly fixed in the mind. Let all the senses and mind be ever devoted to the worship of the Lord. Let there be no attraction for any other thing. Fix the mind in remembering me always so that it will not wander elsewhere. towards body, wealth and home. Then it will be calm, peaceful and carefree. This is a sign of the mind being well engaged in good company. If the mind is vagrant, it cannot be called well merged in Him. After quoting these words, the author goes on to relate the story of Ram Navami festival in Shirdi. As Ram Navami is the most celebrated festival at Shirdi, another fuller account as published in Sri Sai Leela magazine is also referred to, and a summary of the festival as related in both these accounts is attempted here. Origin. One Mr. Gopal Rao Gund was a surveyor in survey department at Kopargaon. He was a great devotee of Baba. He had three wives but had no issue. With Sai Baba's blessings, a son was born to him. In the joy that he felt due to this, the idea of celebrating a fair or Urus occurred to him in the year 1897. And he placed it for consideration before other Shirdi devotees, Tatya Patil, Dada Kote Patil, and Madhav Rav Deshpande, also known as Shama. They all approved of the idea and got for it Sai Baba's permission and blessings. Then, an application for getting the collector's sanction for celebrating the Urus was made. But as the village Kulkarni reported against holding the fair, the sanction was refused. But, as Sai Baba had blessed it, they tried again and ultimately succeeded in getting the collector's sanction. The day for the Urus was fixed on the Ram Navami day, after having consultation with Sai Baba. It seems he had some purpose in this, that is, the unification of the two festivals, the Urus and the Ram Navami, and the unification of the two communities, the Hindus and the Muslims. As future events showed, this end or object was duly achieved. Though the permission was obtained, other difficulties cropped up. Shirdi was a village and there was scarcity of water. There were two wells in the village. The one in use dried up soon and the water from the second was brackish. This brackish water was turned sweet by Sai Baba by putting flowers into it. As the water of this well was insufficient, Tatya Patil had to arrange to get water from outside. Temporary shops were to be constructed and wrestling bounds arranged. Gopal Rao Gund had a friend by name Damu Anakasar of Ahmednagar. He also was similarly unhappy in the matter of progeny, though he had two wives. He too was blessed by Sai Baba with sons, and Mr. Gund prevailed upon his friend to prepare and supply one flag for the procession of the fair. He also succeeded in inducing Mr. Nana Sahib Nimonkar to supply another flag. Both these flags were taken in procession through the village and finally fixed at the two corners of the masjid, which is called by Sai Baba as Dwarka Mai. This is being done even now. The Chandan procession. There was another procession which was started in this fair. The idea of Chandan procession originated with one Mr. Amir Shakar Dalal, a Muslim bhakta from Kurla. This procession is held in honor of great Muslim saints. Chandan paste and scrappings are put in the thali and carried with incense burning before them in procession to the accompaniment of band and music through the village. And then, after returning to the masjid, the contents of the dishes are thrown on the nimbar and walls of the masjid with hands. This work was managed by Mr. Amir Shakar for the first 3 years and then later by his wife. So on the same day, the two processions, the flags by the Hindus and the Chandan by the Muslims, went on side by side and is still going on without any problem. Arrangement. This day was very dear and sacred to the devotees of Sai Baba. Most of them turned up for the occasion and took part in the management of the fair. Tatya Kote Patil looked to all outward affairs, while the internal management was entirely left to Radha Krishnamai, a female devotee of Baba. Her residence was full of guests on the occasion, and she had to look after their needs and also arrange for all the paraphernalia of the fair. Another work which she willingly did was to clean and whitewash the entire masjid, its wall and floor, which were blackened and were full of soot on account of the ever-burning dhuni of Sai Baba. This work she did during the night, when Sai Baba went to sleep every alternate day in the chavadi. She had to take out all the things, including the dhuni, and after thorough cleaning and whitewashing, replace them as they were before. Feeding the poor, which was so dear to Sai Baba, was also a great item in this fair. For this purpose, cooking on a grand scale and preparing various sweet dishes was done in Radha Krishnamai's lodging, and various rich and wealthy devotees took a leading part in this affair. Transformation of Urus into Ram Navami festival. Things were going on in this way and the fair was gradually increasing in importance till 1912 when a change took place. That year, one devotee, Mr. Krishna Rao Jogeshwar Bhisham, the author of Sai Sagunapasana, came for the fair with Dada Sahib Kharpade of Amravati and was staying on the previous day in the Dikshit Vada. While he was lying on the veranda and while Mr. Lakshman Rao, alias Kaka Mahajani, was going with puja materials to the masjid, a new thought arose in his mind and he accosted the latter thus. There is some providential arrangement in the fact that the Urus of fair is celebrated in Shirdi on the Ram Navami day. The Ram Navami day is very dear to all the Hindus. Then why not begin the Ram Navami festival, the celebration of the birth of Sri Ram, on this day here? Kaka Mahajani liked the idea and it was arranged to get Baba's permission in this matter. The main difficulty was how to secure a Haridas who would do the kirtans and sing the glories of the Lord on this occasion. But Bhishma solved this difficulty by saying that his Ram Akhyan, the composition on Rama's birth, was ready and he would do the kirtan himself, while Kaka Mahajani should play on the harmonium. It was also arranged to get the Suntavada, which is the ginger powder mixed with sugar as prasad, was prepared by Radha Krishnamai. So they immediately went to the masjid to get Baba's permission. Baba, who knew all the things and what was happening there, asked Mahajani what was going on in the Vada. Being rather perturbed, Mahajani could not understand the importance of the question and he remained silent. Baba then asked Bhishma what he had to say. He explained the idea of celebrating Ram Navami festival and asked for Baba's permission, and Baba gladly gave it. All rejoiced and made preparations for the Jayanti festival. Next day, the masjid was decorated with buntings, a cradle was supplied by Radha Krishnamai and placed in front of Baba's seat, and the proceedings started. Bhishma stood up for kirtan and Mahajani played on the harmonium. Sai Baba sent a man to call Mahajani. Mahajani hesitated, doubting whether Baba would allow the festival to go on. But when he went to Baba, the latter asked him what was going on and why the cradle was placed there. He answered Ram Navami festival had commenced and the cradle was put on for that purpose. Baba took a garland from the nimbar and placed it around his neck and sent another garland for Bhishma. Then the kirtan commenced. When it came to a close, sounds of victory to Ram went up and gulal, red powder, was thrown all around amidst band and music. Everybody was overjoyed when suddenly a roar was heard. The red powder thrown promiscuously went up and somehow fell into Baba's eyes. Baba got wild and began to scold and abuse loudly. People got frightened by this and began to take to their heels. The intimate devotees who knew Baba well took these scoldings and outpourings of Baba as blessings in disguise. They thought that when Ram was born, it was proper for Baba to get wild and enraged to kill Ravan and his demons in the form of egoism and wicked thoughts. Besides, they knew that whenever a new thing was undertaken at Shirdi, it was usual with Baba to get wild and angry, and so they kept quiet. Radha Krishnamai was rather afraid and thought Baba might break the cradle, and she asked Mahajani to pull the cradle back. When he went to loosen and unfasten the cradle, Baba went to him and asked him not to remove it. Then after some time, Baba became calm and that day's program, including Mahapuja and Arati, was finished. Later on, Mr. Mahajani asked Baba for permission to remove the cradle. Baba refused the same, saying the festival was not yet finished. Next day, another kirtan and Gopal Kala ceremony was performed and then Baba allowed the cradle to be removed. While the Ram Navami festival was thus going on, the procession of the two flags by day and that of the Chandan by night went off with the usual pomp and show. From this time onwards, the Urus of Baba was transformed into the Ram Navami festival. From next year, that is 1913, the items in the program of Ram Navami began to increase. Radha Krishnamai started a Naam Saptah, singing the glory of God's name continuously day and night for 7 days, from 11th day of Chaitra. For this, all devotees took part by turns, and she also joined in sometimes early in the morning. As Ram Navami festival is celebrated in many parts all over the country, the difficulty of getting a Haridas was felt again. But 5 or 6 days before the festival, Mahajani incidentally met Balabhuva, who was known as modern Tukaram, and got him to do the Kirtan that year. The next year, in 1914, another Balabhuva Satarkar of Birhat Siddhak Kavate in district Satara could not act as a Haridas in his own town, as plague was prevailing there, and he came to Shirdi. With Baba's permission, which was secured through Kaka Sahib Dikshit, he did the Kirtan and was sufficiently recompensed for his labor. The difficulty of getting a new Haridas every year was finally solved from 1914 by Sai Baba, as he entrusted this function to Das Ganu Maharaj permanently, and since then he has been successfully and creditably conducting that function so far. Since 1912, this festival began to grow gradually year by year. From the 8th to the 12th of Chaitra, Shirdi looked like a beehive of people. Shops began to increase, celebrated wrestlers took part in wrestling bouts, feeding of the poor was done on a grander scale. Hard work and sincere efforts of Radha Krishnamai turned Shirdi into a sansthan. A beautiful horse, a palanquin, chariot and many silver items, utensils, pots, buckets, pictures, mirrors were presented. Elephants were also sent for the procession. Though all this increased enormously, Sai Baba ignored everything and maintained his simplicity and modesty as before. It is to be noted that both the Hindus and Mohammedans have been working in unison in both the processions during the entire festival, and there has been no confrontation or quarrel between them at all so far. First, about 5,000 to 7,000 people used to gather, but that figure went up to 75,000 in some years. Still, there was no outbreak of any epidemic disease nor any riots worth the name during the past many years. Repairs to the masjid. Another important idea occurred to Gopal Gund. Just as he started the Uruz of fair, he thought he should repair and renovate the masjid. So, in order to carry out the repairs, he collected stones and got them dressed. But this work was not assigned to him. This was reserved for Nana Sahib Chandorkar and the pavement work for Kaka Sahib Dikshit. Initially, Baba was unwilling to allow them to have these works done. But with the intervention of Mahal Sapati, a local devotee of Baba, his permission was secured. Baba took a small gaddi for his seat, discarding the usual piece of sackcloth used until then. In 1911, the Sabha Mandap was also put in order with great labor and effort. The open space in front of the masjid was very small and inconvenient. Kaka Sahib Dikshit wanted to extend it and put a roofing on it. At great expense, he got iron posts, pillars and trusses and started the work. At night, all the devotees worked hard and fixed the posts. But Baba, when he returned from Chavadi next morning, uprooted them all and threw them out. Once it so happened that Baba got very excited, caught a pole with one hand and began to shake and uproot it, and with the other hand caught the neck of Tatya Patil. He took by force Tatya's feta, struck a match, set it on fire and threw it in a pit. At that time Baba's eyes flashed like burning embers. No one dared to look at him. All got terribly frightened. Baba took out a rupee from his pocket and threw it there as if it were an offering on an auspicious occasion. Tatya was also much frightened. No one knew what was going on and what was going to happen to Tatya, and no one dared to interfere. Bhagoji Shinde, the leper devotee of Baba, made a bold advance, but he was pushed aside by Baba. Madhav Rao was also similarly treated, pelted with brick pieces. So all those who went to intercede were similarly dealt with. But after some time, Baba's anger cooled down. He sent for a shopkeeper, got from him an embroidered feta, and himself tied it on Tatya's head, as if he was being given a special honor. All the people were wonderstruck to see the strange behavior of Baba. They were at a loss to know what enraged Baba so suddenly and what led him to assault Tatya Patil and why his anger cooled down the next moment. Baba was sometimes very calm and quiet and talked sweet things with love, but suddenly, with or without any pretext, got enraged. Many such incidents may be related, but I do not know which to choose and which to omit. I therefore refer them as they occur to me. In the next chapter, the question whether Baba was a Hindu or a Muslim will be taken up, and his yogic practices and powers and other matters will also be dealt with. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 7. Wonderful Incarnation. Behavior of Sai Baba. His yogic practices. His all-pervasiveness and mercy. Leper devotees' service. Master Kharpade's plague case. And going to Pandharpur. Wonderful Incarnation. Sai Baba knew all yogic practices. He was well versed in the 6 processes, including dhauti, stomach cleaning by a moistened piece of linen, khanda yoga, separating his limbs and joining them again, and samadhi. If you think that he was a Hindu, he looked like a Yavan, and if you thought him to be a Yavan, he looked like a pious Hindu. No one definitely knew whether he was a Hindu or a Muslim. He celebrated the Hindu festival of Ram Navami with all due formalities and, at the same time, permitted the Chandan procession of the Muslims. He encouraged wrestling bouts in this festival. When the Gokulashtami came, he got the Gopal Kala ceremony duly performed, and on Eid festivals, he allowed the Muslims to say the prayers in his masjid. Once, during a Muharram festival, some Mohammedans proposed to construct a tazia or tabut in the masjid, keep it there for some days, and later take it in a procession through the village. Sai Baba allowed the keeping of the tabut for 4 days, and on the 5th day got it removed from the masjid without the least compunction. If we say that he was a Muslim, his ears were pierced, and if you think that he was a Hindu, he advocated the practice of circumcision, though according to Mr. Nana Saheb Chandorkar, who observed him closely, he was not himself circumcised. If you call him Hindu, he always lived in the masjid. If Muslim, he had always a dhuni, sacred fire there. And the following things which are contrary to Muslim religion: grinding on the handmill, blowing of the conch and bells, oblation in the fire, bhajan, giving of food and worship of Baba's feet by means of argya. All these were allowed there. If you think that he was a Muslim, the best of Brahmins and Agnihotris, leaving aside the orthodox ways, fell prostrate at his feet. Those who went to make inquiries about his caste were dumbfounded and were captured by his darshan. So no one could definitely decide whether Sai Baba was a Hindu or a Muslim. This is no wonder, for he who completely surrenders himself to the Lord by getting rid of his egoism and body consciousness thus becomes one with him and has nothing to do between any questions of caste or nationality. Baba saw no difference between any 2 castes, and even between beings. He took meat and fish with fakirs, but did not grumble when dogs touched the dishes with their mouths. Such a unique and wonderful incarnation was Sai Baba. On account of the merits in my past birth, I had the good fortune to sit at his feet and enjoy his blessed company. The joy and delight I derived from there was incomparable. In fact, Sai Baba was pure anand and consciousness. I cannot sufficiently describe him, his greatness and uniqueness. He took delight at his feet, was established in his own self. Many sannyasis, sadhaks and all sorts of men aspiring for salvation came to Sai Baba. He always walked, talked and laughed with them and always uttered Allah Malik. He never liked discussion or disputation. He was always calm and controlled, though irritable at times, always preached Vedanta, and nobody knew till the last who was Baba. Princess and poor people were treated alike by him. He knew the inmost secrets of all, and when he gave expression to them, all were surprised. He was a repository of all knowledge, still he feigned ignorance. Such were the characteristics of Sai Baba. Though he had a human body, his deeds testified to his godhood. All people considered him as a god in Shirdi. Behavior of Sai Baba. Ignorant that I am, I cannot describe Baba's miracles. He got almost all the temples in Shirdi repaired. Through Tatya Patil, the temples of Shani, Ganpati, Shankar Parvati, village deity and Maruti were put in order. His charity was also remarkable. The money he used to collect as Dakshina was freely distributed. 20 rupees to some, 15 or 50 to others every day. People were immensely benefited by having Baba's darshan. Some became hale and hearty. Wicked people were turned into good ones. Kushta or leprosy was cured in some cases. Many got their desires fulfilled without any medicine being put in the eyes. Some blind men got back the sight, and some lame ones got back the limbs. Nobody could see the end of his extraordinary greatness. His fame spread far and wide, and pilgrims from all sides flocked to Shirdi. Baba had his asana near the dhuni and always rested there. He sat there in meditation, sometimes even without a bath. He used to tie a small white turban on his head and wear a clean dhotar around his waist and a shirt on his body. This was his attire in the beginning. He first practiced medicine in the village, examined patients and gave them medicines. He was always successful and he became famous as a hakim or a doctor. A curious case may be narrated here. One devotee had his eyes quite red and swollen. No doctor was available in Shirdi. The other devotees took him to Baba. In such cases, other doctors would use ointments, anjans or cow's milk and camphorated drugs. But Baba's remedy was quite unique. He pounded some biba and made two balls of them and thrust them one on each eye of the patient and wrapped a cloth around them. Next day, the bandage was removed and water was poured over them. The inflammation subsided and the pupils became white and clear. Though the eyes are very delicate, the biba caused no hurt but removed the disease of the eyes. Many such cases were cured, and this is only an instance in this regard.
Sai Baba, Sai Baba, Shri Guru Sai Baba. Mangalagiridhar Sai Baba,
Mangalagiridhar Sai Baba,
Shri Guru Purna Sai Baba,
Shri Guru Purna Sai Baba,
Karuna Sagar Sai Baba,
Karuna Sagar Sai Baba,
Nitya Niranjana Sai Baba,
Nitya Niranjana
Sai Baba, Sai Baba, Shri Guru Sai Baba.
Sai Baba, Sai Baba, Satguru Shirdi Baba.
Sai Guru Var Ki Paramana
Tune in to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Sairam, and welcome to our weekly series Tryst with Divinity, where we bring you stories of devotees who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Today we have for you a conversation with Dr. Alan Levy, a practicing modern psychoanalyst from Westport, Connecticut, USA. In this episode, Dr. Levy shares how Swami personally guided him on the principles and art of meditation. In conversation with Dr. Levy is Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti, and this was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai in August 2011.
Sairam, Dr. Alan Levy, and welcome to the studios of Radio Sai. In fact, I should say welcome once again to the studios of Radio Sai, because you were with us just a couple of months ago, and I think it was in May 2011, and you shared about your journey to Swami, how you were captivated by His voice, by His message, and how you slowly transformed yourself from being a teenager searching for meaning in life to someone who is now helping so many find meaning in their life. That was really beautiful, you know, the journey from a lost teenager to becoming a psychoanalyst. That was fascinating and moving. And in fact, we already published this entire conversation on our website, radiosai.org. I think you probably must have seen it.
Yes, I did, and I was very surprised.
Surprised?
I didn't know who it was when I read the title, and I was interested in finding out who is this person. And when I actually looked at the article, I saw my parents' picture there and several pictures of myself, and I was so surprised. I went to my wife. I said, look what they did.
Wonderful. Another important thing you shared in the previous conversation was how Swami trained and personally guided you on the principles and the art of meditation. We did talk about it a little in the previous conversation, and I think this is something very significant, because though there are any number of occasions when we have heard Swami talking about love, about service, about selflessness, and similar topics to small groups or even to large congregations, when it comes to topic like meditation, I think He has spoken very little and only to a few. And you have had that opportunity to listen and be guided by Swami in this spiritual practice. And in the changed circumstances that we are in today, where we no more have the privilege of witnessing His physical form, I think seeing and feeling Him internally has become really very vital and very necessary. Meditation, in my opinion, has a big role to play now in facilitating us to experience Him. That's why I feel, let us dwell today on this theme of meditation. So if someone were to ask you, why at all should we meditate? What would be your answer?
Well, I'm very, very happy to be able to share with everyone and to be here at Prashanthi Nilayam in the presence of yourself and the Radio Sai staff. You're doing a great thing for the world in sharing Swami's teachings. From the moment I came to Swami in 1978, after about 4 days, Swami called the group I was with in, which included Hilda Charlton, who was a wonderful meditation teacher. And Swami immediately started the group interview with, what is meditation? And everybody said something, of course, and all of it was wrong. And Swami said, no one can teach meditation. It is something as natural as the breath. Everyone has the right to be able to meditate. You can only share the process of what it means to arrive at meditation. And then Swami described the three steps of meditational process. Concentration as the first step. Contemplation as the process where there is a feeling involved with the meditational process, love and peace, inspiration, inspiring feelings and thoughts about God. And then the mind is transcended, and that transcendence of the mind, going beyond thought and feeling even into the divine oneness, is the actual practice of meditation, and that is the meditational state. So these three levels or ways of approaching meditational practice is extremely beneficial to the individual. It's beneficial on the physical level and physiologically brings deep, deep rest to the body, to the heart, as well as to all of the organ systems. And it actually has been measured neurophysiologically to be deeper than deep sleep. Cannot replace deep sleep, however, because it is not quite the same process as deep sleep, and its function is a little bit different. But value of rest attributed to the meditational practice of 20 minutes is deeper than deep sleep. And so, do you know that if the pharmacy companies could bottle this and make it into capsules, it would be the golden cash cow of all pharmaceutical companies. Of course, they can't, so they never talk about it. But it definitely is a curative agent for all physical ailments, all of them, even genetic, to some degree. Now, on the mental level and emotional level, of course, we know what it does for the mind. Swami says that meditational practice is for the mind. It's a cleansing and a purifying process that the mind undergoes. As well, the heart, in its feeling world, undergoes purification. So the emotions are purified. It's a release of the past stresses of the past. We can say stress is karma, past karmas that are influencing us negatively, maybe even positively, because even golden chains bind, as Swami has said. So this practice of meditational process allows the attachments and desires of the mind, as Swami has said, to dissolve. Even the underlying vasanas that underlie the attachments and desires from one life to another that carry over dissolve through meditational practice if one is ardent and sincere enough about it.
So you are saying we should meditate because at the physiological level it can give us a rest which is much, much more than what you get if you are in deep sleep.
Yes.
So it is helpful to you physically.
Yes.
And it is helpful to you mentally because it will help you to get over your past. It will help you to dissolve your desires and impurities.
Yes.
Is there something more to meditation? Why we should meditate?
Yes. So these are the side benefits, the secondary benefits of meditation or practice. They are not the primary purpose. The primary purpose is to find Swami and our God Self inside ourself by looking inward in an introspective way. We turn the mind from the perception of the world through the five senses, the sensory perceptions. We close our eyes and we turn it 180 degrees inside. And inside our own self, in our soul and beyond, we find our oneness with God. We find our oneness with Swami. We find our oneness with Swami as form, and we find our oneness with Swami as formless. And that is liberation. In the moments that we are meditating, we experience in our deepest moments of meditation freedom, peace of mind, perfect oneness at times. And even if a meditational practice does not yield those immediate results, It will, with regularity of practice, each day, with regular, sincere, persistent, persevering sadhana of meditational practice, will yield those results if we take what we find in our meditational practice and bring it to help others through love and our understanding that we are one.
So if I get what you're saying, meditation will help us to go within.
Yes.
And experience the peace that is locked in our heart.
Yes.
And if someone were to ask why I should do this, I think the answer is that is what we are looking for all the time. We
yes.
want happiness. We want peace. And we are looking for it outside all the time, unknowing that it is actually within.
That's right. We are our own temple of God. God dwells in our heart, even beyond the heart. And we are a walking, living temple. We are the embodiments of love, as Swami has said so many times, the embodiments of God. We are God, as Swami is. And we only have to realize that. And so, where is there to go? And what is there to do when we know this of ourselves? Through all our sadhana, but especially meditation, because meditation is like an exponentially catalytic agent that increases the intensity and value of all the sadhana that we do.
Okay, so you are saying if we are doing meditation, it will help us to be more effective in our other spiritual practices.
That's right. And it will intensify the results. Of course, we're not attached to the results because we surrender the result to God. We give it at the feet of Swami. That is up to Swami. But it will bring quicker results.
So, if I might put it in another way, if you are one who is interested in doing service, meditation will help us to serve better.
Absolutely.
If we are one who is interested in singing bhajans,
yes.
meditation will help us to sing bhajans better.
Absolutely.
Can you explain this more? Can you elaborate on this?
Yes.
Can you say how is this going to happen?
So, for instance, when we're engaged in seva, where we find that we are serving ourselves and another that is less fortunate than we are in having the material necessities of life or having health or whatever it may be, we know that we are one. We experience that we are one because we know that we have experienced the oneness of peace and God when we have meditated. So we have experienced the depth of ourself that brings us this awareness. And so when we act in this world for the sake of others, and always we are trying to be more acting in this world for the sake of others, less and less selfish, then we know that we are actually serving ourselves because we can see ourselves in the other person. This is what meditation actually brings.
So it is not only an intellectual understanding of the concept that we are all one, that the other person is same as me, that the same spirit is there in the other person. But when you meditate, you actually experience that oneness. So once you experience that oneness, you can actually live that principle in your life more effectively.
That's absolutely true. Swami has written in a letter, I happen to have a copy of this letter he wrote to Hilda when she had gone back to America in 1966. And in this letter, she was giving meditation classes in New York City to hundreds of people every Thursday night. And Swami wrote, I am aware of your meditation classes. This is very good. And it is important that all that attend the classes realize that the meditational process is only for one purpose. And that purpose is to promote a more loving attitude, a more loving action towards all people as brothers and sisters in God. And if meditation brings that awareness and people act in a more loving way towards each other, then the purpose of meditating is truly served. Otherwise, it is a true waste of time.
I think this is really significant. Meditation is not for us to just experience something within and give us a feeling that we are growing spiritually, that we are becoming enlightened, or that we are becoming more holier than the other person. Meditation is not that. If meditation doesn't help us to be more loving towards the other person, if meditation doesn't help us to see God in the other person, then it is no meditation.
That is correct. And along this line is very, very important to be aware that if meditation brings a feeling of I'm more spiritual than anybody else, that has actually resulted in greater ego rather than less ego. And how can we find freedom and oneness in love in God with greater ego? It is impossible. So true meditation brings the awareness that I am really nothing. God is all. God is all in everyone. And this is the only purpose of life, to serve God as God in ourself and God in everyone together in love. Serve God and everyone in love. That is the only purpose of life, really. Swami came here to this earth for a very short time, this only 85 years according to the Julian calendar, 95 years according to the ancient Indian astrological lunar calendar. And for that short time, he was perfectly free the entire time. It was never a moment where he lost consciousness of oneness with God, even from birth, as he has said. And yet all he did was love all, serve all, and give as much as he could to everyone all the time without any thought of himself. He was just perfect love incarnate. This is God. This is the oneness of God as it truly is in giving an example for how to live on earth. So when we are meditating, we are trying to find our oneness in God, just as Swami lived it. We are trying to find our oneness with Sai, as he lived on earth. And if we find that oneness, we realize that we have the same purpose, on earth, to love all, serve all, and help everyone who is in need when the opportunity comes to us.
That's wonderful. Now let me ask you another question. We know the world that we live in today is so different. And if you say someone that, you know, you should meditate, he or she would probably say that, you know, you have no clue of how difficult it is for me to find time for anything in my life. You have no clue of how I don't find, even for my domestic duties and household responsibilities, where is the time? Life is so fast now. Where is the time to take, you know, 15, 20 minutes out in the morning and sit and just do nothing? I mean, just sit and meditate. I don't think it is practical. We are living in a different world.
This is the mind speaking. We brush our teeth every day. We wash our bodies every day. We eat every day.
But if I don't do all those things, I cannot lead my life. I have to do this. Those are the basic things I have to do every day. I can't help it.
And washing our mind and purifying and washing our heart every day is as important and even more important than brushing our teeth and feeding our body, actually as much as we do. But you might say, I don't have the time. I just can't find it, which some people say.
I'm just playing the devil's advocate. Yeah.
And so, good. So, yes. We can, devil is God too. Who cares?
That's nice.
So, all are one. But the fact of the matter is, when we meditate, we become more efficient about what we do. We think more clearly. We can arrive at decisions that are correct more easily. We can think through and organize our day with greater efficiency. Everything that we do becomes more effective. And in the end, it saves far more time than it actually has taken. This is what I've found over the 40 years I have been meditating.
That's great. So we are saying that if you are a professional and if you took 2 hours to complete a particular assignment, try meditation. Try 10 minutes, 15 minutes of meditation every morning and sit for a week. Is it helping you to improve your productivity? Are you able to do what you are doing in 2 hours now in, say, 1.5 hours?
Very good.
Because meditation is a process by which our mind becomes sharp. It's like the concentrating the rays of the sun through a magnifying glass. The power becomes so immense, it can burn the paper. I think that is what meditation can do. If you can sharpen your mind, if your concentration level increases.
That's absolutely true. It is meditational practice on God that actually, through love, makes the mind focused. It promotes willpower.
Willpower, that's
Iksha
important.
Shakti, I think it's called. Iksha Shakti.
Iksha Shakti.
Yes, willpower.
Iksha Shakti, yes. Willpower.
Let's look at this clearly. Our mind in its muddle is going through desires and attachments. It overshadows the buddhi.
The buddhi, yes.
The higher intellect. The part of ourself, the higher mind, that is actually in oneness with our soul self and God. That being the case, it is like a cloudy day. And the sun is shining all the time, but we can't see it. But when we sit to meditate, we, through a mantric meditation, or through name and form, or through jyoti meditation as Swami has taught it, or dharana, or any of the processes of meditation that Swami has shared, and he has shared many, we are allowed and we have enabled ourselves to transcend this muddled mind, the lower mind, the desires and the attachments. For a moment, we all can go through and transcend this lower mind. I have shared this with 7-year-olds in Haiti.
Haiti?
In Haiti. 500 people after the earthquake meditated according to Swami's teachings on Soham. Breathing in so, breathing out hum. And were in that few days that I shared this, that most of them reported that they had felt much, much better. And some of them even reported that for the first night they slept through the entire night since the earthquake had happened. All ages learned, from 5 to 7 years old, right through to 85 years old. They all practiced it. If they could do it, and they didn't even know Swami, then it is easy that as a devotee, we can easily take up this practice. Even if our mind is a muddled mess like a monkey mind, and we can't concentrate very well, it doesn't matter. Once we sit down, close our eyes, and say, so, breathing in, hum, breathing out, mentally to ourselves, the mind will do whatever it does. It releases stresses, karmas from the past. And when it does, the mind starts flying into other thoughts, because that's what happens when the dissolving of stresses occurs. The mind starts getting kicked into thoughts. But we can easily and comfortably and effortlessly come back to so breathing in, hum breathing out. And if we do that just for a few moments, whatever else happens, as long as we sit there for 15, 20 minutes, or even if we don't have time for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes is best, because the neurophysiology of the brain chemistry synchronizes the left and right hemispheres and the front and the back in 20 minutes. But if you don't have that much time, do what you have. So this process can be done effectively and easily without any effort. Just if we take the time to sit, close our eyes, and say, I'm not going to move my body for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. I'm not going to move from the spot. I'm just going to think about God. So breathing in, for instance, hum breathing out.
Wonderful. Can you now lead a session of meditation? Can we have a demonstration of meditation? Can the listeners get an idea of how they want to do this, if they want to do this?
I would love to do that, and I would like to invite all the listeners to share just for a moment that we do this together and take the time not to be disturbed while we can share meditation together.
Yeah, and I join the listeners.
Oh, that's so nice. Okay. So, in the beginning of meditation, we do 3 ohms in honor of God and Swami and the lineage of this meditational practice, which is actually over 10,000 years old. We don't even know how long ago it was instituted. Swami has shared it, and it is, we take so mentally, breathing in, we follow the breath, so breathing in, we follow the breath mentally, hum breathing out, so breathing in, Hum, breathing out. We think to ourselves, S-O, so breathing in, H-U-M, hum, breathing out. And we do it as if we have a nose in the center of our chest, which is the heart center, which Swami has indicated to me personally, it allows the heart to open up, because that is the gateway to God. So we breathe as if we have a nose in the center of our fourth chakra, the heart center, as Hanuman's is always depicted. So let's begin by Om. Oh, and one thing I must mention, that when the mind wanders, don't be disturbed by it. Don't judge the mind for doing this wandering. Don't criticize yourself for having a monkey mind. We all have monkey minds. That's the human condition. But just gently, easily, and effortlessly come back to so breathing in, hum breathing out. When you notice that you're not thinking so breathing in, hum breathing out. And it's as simple as that. So let's start with three ohms, and then we'll meditate together for about 10 minutes. Om. Place ourselves lovingly at the lotus feet of our Lord Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Swami, you are the doer. You are the meditator within us. You are the goal of meditation. And you are the entirety of the process. Please meditate within us and bring us to realization of our oneness with you as God. So now we can follow the breath as so breathing in mentally and as hum breathing out. It means I am that. That I am. That is God. We're breathing in so, thinking so. We're thinking hum as we breathe out. And we do this as if we have a nose in the center of the chest. We're breathing through this nose in our heart center. Gently, easily, and effortlessly, without criticism or judgment of the mind, bring it back to so breathing in, hum breathing out. Once again, if the mind wanders, gently, easily, and effortlessly, bring the mind back to so breathing in, hum breathing out. Thank you. Once again, when the mind wanders, gently, easily, and effortlessly, bring the mind back to so breathing in through the heart center, hum, breathing out. Has wandered easily, comfortably, and effortlessly. Bring it gently back to so breathing in, hum, breathing out, as the breath naturally occurs, without criticism or judgment of the mind. This demonstration of meditation and meditational practice, let's conclude keeping the eyes closed for at least 2 minutes. Let's just be for a moment. Feel what you feel without the so hum and following the breath. Feel what you feel. All meditations, according to Swami's teachings, we end with a prayer of your choice. Personally, I like, Sukhino bhavantu, samasta lokaha, sukhino bhavantu.
Demonstration of Soham meditation. We end the meditation by chanting the Shanti Mantra. Om Shanti 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 Loka Samastha Sukhino Bhavantu. And I think that is what meditation does. It calms our beings completely and peace descends in our being.
So did you feel deeper relaxation?
Absolutely.
Some peace was there.
Yes.
This indicates correct meditation. Just those feelings. Some deeper relaxation, some peace.
Yeah, you definitely feel very, very relaxed. And the mind is so calm. I think when the mind is calm, the entire anatomy of your body is relaxed. And then you are a different person.
And did you notice that when we started this meditation, my ohms were a bit thin and stressed.
Mm.
But when we ended the meditations, the ohms were fuller and feeling a little deeper. That in of itself is the proof that meditational practice brings greater depth in the moment to an individual.
Mm.
Even as I had experienced it right here with you now.
Absolutely. So Swami guided you into various kinds of meditation?
Yes.
Like?
Many types. Mostly Swami talked to me about meditational practices. That's what he did in the interviews that I had with him and the opportunities by the grace of God and Swami, of course, Swami's grace. So there is Soha meditation, and that is a basic and simple way to start. After about 3 to 6 months of doing Soha meditation, if one is starting meditation, then one can go into a little more of the complex forms of meditation. The next one is name and form. So we take Swami's name, or the name of any form of God, and we visualize Swami's form, or any form of God. Swami has said, all names are mine, all forms are mine. The one that pleases you most. But you stick with that, because the mind functions best in being transcended by sticking to one choice, either one name of God, one form of God, staying with that in a meditational practice. So after some time of choosing, you stay with that. So the name and form works by when the mind thinks about the name, then it starts wandering, but it can wander to the form, and it can visualize the form in all its glory and physical beauty, and then it can go back to the name. And then, like that, these two rails, Swami said, are the fences on the path to oneness, name and form. Now, any of these forms of meditation can take you the whole way into oneness of love with God. It's just a choice of what one prefers. Some of them speed it up a little because they bring greater depth of soul, self, and the intensity of the meditation brings a greater transcendence of the mind more quickly and staying there in the depths. For instance, there's Dharana meditation.
Dharana.
D-H-A-R-A-N-A.
Yeah, it's Dharana meditation.
Right? Swami talked about this basically in 88. And maybe he talked about it before, but I found out about it when he talked in 88. And what he said is, you pick a point of focus. And Ramana Maharshi, he said, used to do this. He would pick a star in the sky, in the evening sky, and just look at it with full concentration of the mind. He would just stare at it. So you pick, like, the flame of the candle or the flame of the jyoti lamp, and then you just look at it with full concentration. Now, the concentration is done by effortless concentration, which means it's relaxed. It's not, like, rigid and, you know, stressed. It's very relaxed with love from the heart. And you just look on that and relax into that and just concentrate on that. That will bring one-pointed focus to the mind. And that brings greater ability to control the mind in daily living and in meditational practice. Then after that, there's Jyoti meditation, of course. We all know about Jyoti, the light meditation that Swami has shared, and it shared directly with Dr. Hislop, Dr. Jack Hislop, back in 1970s. And probably he shared it with others before that, but that's when we found out about it. And Swami has said that this meditational form, which I'm not going to elaborate on here in depth, but you can read about it, is using the mind like a thorn to get out the thorn of the mind. So it engages the mind in sublime concentrative practices that allow the mind to keep its focus on divine inspiring thoughts. And in that way, purifying the heart, the mind, the senses, the body, and transcending the mind as well through the visualization of light, the light of God, the light of love, in everything and everyone, everywhere. And once this imaginative visualization is practiced, even the first time, it effectively brings reality to the consciousness of the individual meditating practitioner or devotee. The first time I read about Jyoti meditation, I sat down in front of a candle flame. This was in 1973, about 1973. I read Swami's meditational practices, and I did concentration on a flame. Then I closed my eyes. I brought it into my heart. I started visualizing it, purifying my heart, then purifying my body. And all of a sudden, it became vast, and I disappeared into this vast globe of love and light. And I was 1973, I was like a beginning nothing. I mean, I didn't know anything. I got scared. And I came out a little afraid. What was this new experience? Ever since then, I've been trying to get back to that experience. That was spontaneous gift from Swami. Mm. But in the practice of meditational if you make an effort, there will be some gift from Swami, some inspiring grace that will lead us on, that will lead you on to want to do it even more ardently, sincerely, and with greater love and intensity. And then to share that love with all others through the practice of meditation is a valuable thing to do in this world.
As you were talking about name and form meditation, I was reminded of the three stages that Swami talks about meditation. You also referred to it earlier.
Yes.
This concentration, contemplation, and meditation. And in one discourse, Swami mentioned that concentration is when you fix your gaze in one form. That is concentration.
Yes.
One-pointed attention on that form. When the form physically moves away after some time, even then, you still look at the form in your mind's eye.
Yes.
It's still with you.
Yes.
That is contemplation.
That is concentration.
Swami said in that discourse, that is contemplation.
Oh, the fact that the form remains with you.
With you in your mind's eye.
And you're inspired by that form,
yes,
in the mind's eye. That is,
yes,
the contemplation.
That is contemplation.
Yes, that's true.
And then Swami says, once you are into this exercise for some time, there will come a period when this form gets imprinted in your heart permanently.
Yes.
That, Swami said, is meditation.
That's beautiful.
And I feel that is so vital now in these changed circumstances, because all we have to do is internalize Swami's image, internalize Swami's love, internalize Swami's darshans.
Yes.
If we can spend every day 10 minutes just seeing in our mind's eye the darshan of Swami, and then keeping that experience alive in our hearts for as long a period as possible.
Yes.
If there is a spare moment, our mind should automatically go back to that state when you're having darshan of Swami. If we can reach that state, I think that is what will keep us tuned to God all the time. We will become a channel of His love. And that is what is meditation.
That is beautiful. And Swami has said that meditation should not be just 20 to 30 minutes once or twice a day. That meditation should be 24/7. 24 hours, 7 days a week. We are thinking about and being with God in our heart. As Swami has given us these darshans for so many years, and all the experiences that we've had, so many people have had so much, and some have had more than others, but that doesn't matter because it is all within us the same. Oneness with God, 100% inner, 100% outer. But in these memories that we have of Swami giving us this darshan, if we value those memories and think upon those memories and contemplate upon those memories, they are not memories anymore. They have now become the seed of God growing within us. It has transcended the mind, and it is permanently established in the heart. And as such, our hearts expand with oneness of love, and we become what Swami has gifted us by being here on this earth. He has said, my life is my message, now your life is my message. You are embodiments of the divine as I am. And that's what happens when we take these memories of darshan and value them as deeply as you are describing.
Wonderful. We will never miss darshan again. And we eventually will become the love, the pure love that He is and He wants us to become. It was wonderful talking to you, Mr. Allen. I think in this conversation you have shared with us very important ideas, thoughts, as well as given us a demonstration of how to practice this powerful spiritual practice in our life and become what Swami wants us to become, beacons of love. Thank you very much for your time.
And thank you very much, Jai Sairam. Thank you, Swami, for giving us your life here on earth.
Jai Ram.
You just heard a conversation with Dr. Allen Levy, a practicing modern psychoanalyst from Westport, Connecticut, USA. This was yet another episode of our series, Tryst with Divinity, where we offer you stories of people who have been touched by His love. This conversation was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai in August 2011. Please share your feedback on this program by writing to listener@radiosai.org. And to listen to another episode of this series, Tryst with Divinity, please tune in at the same time, same day, next week. Thank you and Sai Ram.